Howdy, everyone. Wayne Spencer here. Proud to be back with our good friends at BBS.com. Well, we're going to rekindle our rodeo reports on Radio Rodeo through their network. They're going to be the first one. It'll be this coming Wednesday. But right now, I have a pleasure to give a tribute to a good friend of mine who is kind of responsible for me getting into the rodeo and becoming a policeman, which changed my life and has given me a world of experiences. This show is dedicated to Susan, Stephanie, Shane, Brother Gene, and everybody in Ada, Oklahoma, and around the world who can come in. And we're going to talk a little bit about growing up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, where the pavement ends and the Wild West begins. Home of the Cheyenne Frontier Days. Jimmy was born in Ada, Oklahoma, and moved here in grade school as a young kid. I, myself, was born here in Cheyenne, and we were friends from the first day of ninth grade till his passing yesterday about 11:01 Oklahoma time. So a little bit about Jimmy Gurley. I think he became famous to the people in Cheyenne in about, fall of 65. And instead of a homecoming king contest, our alma mater, East High, where we were members of the class of 66, we had what we called the East Beast competition. And the guys would get up that were nominated or joined, they would get dressed up in their best outfit, kind of like going to Comic-Con now, but a 1965 version, if you will. Well, Jimmy was voted by popular demand of the student body to be the East Beast of the homecoming that year. How do you come to be East Beast? Well, the rest of the school has to vote on you after you do a presentation on stage, and they voted. Jimmy came on stage, now imagine this, with a kind of a stocking cap and an antelope horn attached to it. Now remember, antelope have horns and not antlers. So he's got this one forked antelope horn, like a cyclops or a rhinoceros on top of his head, kind of dressed up like the Frankenstein monster otherwise. Had his arm in one sleeve tucked into the sleeve, so he looked like a one-armed cyclops, and did his little routine on there. And my gosh, if the kids didn't vote him the East Beast of 1965, and believe me, that was an honor. I don't know if he ever posted it on a resume, but he should have. So that's the kind of guy we dealt with, a Jimmy Gurley, Jimmy Lee Gurley. First day of ninth grade, Mr. Oberg's mechanical drawing class was the first day I met him. It was the first day he saw and met me. We've talked about this over the years, how we both thought the other guy was, I don't know, we didn't have the term then, but we would have used the term nerd today. But it took about a week, and we became lifelong friends. All of this kind of spiked by our joint love affair with motorcycles, with hot rods. Jimmy had the first Corvette later on after high school that I ever got to drive. And pretty girls. Well, actually, any girl met our fancy in those days. But the other day when I was talking with his daughter, Stephanie, and I was hoping to get down there before he passed, she said, I hope you can get here, and I want to hear some stories about you and Daddy growing up. And through the courtesy of my friends Don and Doug getting me back on the air so fast, I've just got a list here of heartfelt stories. But now we got to set the stage. Kind of hard to talk about a good old boy when you don't have all the other friends, new friends, sitting around you. In my little broadcast room here in Cheyenne, it's just my wife of some 45, 46 years. By the way, the other day I introduced her that way. I said, this is my wife of 45 years. And the guy went over and said, well, Mrs. Spencer, 45 years. She said, yes, sir. And if that old boy don't shape up, it won't be 46. I'm on probation, folks. Now, one of the high school stories of Jimmy, and I'll rattle back and forth on some of these. I talked about the East Beast. But Jim, very innovative. He should have patented this idea. I don't know. I've seen it in movies since. But he was the first one that I saw do this. And he did it for quite a while. And you can imagine 1965 morals in a strict high school. He invented a mirror that fit over his shoes. And back in 65, remember the girls? You all wore dresses or skirts to school. Well, Jimmy's theory with his mirror was a sneak a peek. If we were in the hallway between classes, going up and down the stairs or whatnot, he would maneuver his foot, hoping to get a peek. Now, I want to tell you this. It was a brilliant idea, but I really don't know of any success with it. But he had a lot of people scared of him. Girls wouldn't come up to him if they saw a mirror on his shoe there for about a week or so. But that's the kind of stuff he worked out and planned at the time. Today, he'd probably be in trouble for being a stalker. God, I miss the good old days of the 60s. Now, some of the stuff I'm going to talk about for his grandkids and young kids listening, these are lessons to learn from the people who made those mistakes. And please, kids, don't do this at home. Don't do it at your school. Jim and I had a good time in high school. We had our motorcycles. After school, after jobs, whatever, Jimmy put it best when he said, we were the kings and Cheyenne was our kingdom. We discovered every secret alley in this town, every vacant lot, every secret way to get from one town to the other under the railroad bridges and everything else on those motorcycles. And that's what really brought us together. He started out with a little yellow Yamaha, and later he was the envy of everybody in town because he got the first 1964 Honda 250 Scrambler. One heck of a bike. I had Triumphs and then later a Ducati. We would travel all over Laramie County exploring different things. One of those explorations, just 30 miles west of Cheyenne, is the Kurt Gowdy State Park. And yes, radio fans, that's named after Kurt Gowdy. Used to be on Wild World of Sports. He grew up here in Cheyenne and went on to a world-famous rodeo or radio career. You got to bear with me, folks. I'm fighting a cold, but I couldn't keep this in any longer. Now, Jimmy and I are up at Granite Lake. It's now a state park, but in those days it was a city reservoir, kind of an informal campground, and a giant dam built, finished in the early 30s. Narrow dam made of granite rock, hand-chiseled by the workmen. I think it was actually part of a WPA project when they built that. So there's your homework assignment, kids. Can't go to an encyclopedia, go to the internet and look up WPA, Work Project of America, where a lot of people credit that of bringing us out of the Depression. History lesson one today. Now, Jimmy and I are riding around the different things, the dirt roads, finding little places to go fast and jump motorcycles, spin donuts or cookies, as we used to call them in those days, and just having a great time. Nobody around, nobody on the lake fishing or anything. We ended up at a little kind of a jaunt island. And that's where the south side of the dam starts, and it's a bowed dam. I guess you physics kids know you need to do that to hold a lot of water back. I'm the one that came up with the idea that it'd be kind of neat to ride across that thing. Of course, I always was a dumb one, you know, because I was in the third grade twice, so Jimmy had to keep track of me. How are we going to get down? Well, he needed a ramp. While we'd been riding around, there was an outhouse. Somebody else had torn the outhouse door off and thrown it away from the outhouse. We went over and picked up that outhouse door in between the two of us on one motorcycle, hauled it back to the dam, and that was our ramp to get to the top of the dam. I was the first one to go down. Went down real nice. Caught the dam and drove across. And of course, if I fell to the right, I'd fall about 400 feet down all those granite rocks. If the easy path was to the left, I would have drowned because that was the highest point of the water. And knowing how dumb I was and dedicating those years, I wouldn't have let go of the motorcycle and swam. I got across all right. At the end of the little bridge, there was a little part you just had to maybe double clutch, pop a wheelie, and get off the dam. Now, I'm standing over there. Jim is on this fairly new, at that time, Honda Scrambler. Big, heavy motorcycle. He gets in the middle of that ramp, and the door collapses. What's he going to do? To the left, 400 foot of stone rock. To the right is the rock. To the left, the deep lake of Granite Springs Reservoir. Well, he just caught it just right. Hit a little gas, got going, stayed upright, and he got across the dam. And now that was, you talk about adrenaline rush. Man, oh man, that was one then. Now, later, being good Boy Scouts like we were, we went to pick up the pieces of the door that crashed. And on the door, certain people used to, before you had, I'm going to put it in today's vernacular for the young kids, before there was Twitter and text messaging, I guess you could say there were outhouse doors. And many a poet left his best work on those outhouse doors. Well, we saw a message about a girl from our school who was kind of the, what do you want to say? She was, we thought, the Mary Poppins type, just cute as a bug in a rug and perky and bubbly and wouldn't have anything to do with us. But somebody had dedicated a poem in her memory that basically wasn't very nice. And, of course, we giggled. And then when we would see that certain young lady again from time to time, we would always giggle because we knew what was written on the outhouse wall about the dream girl at East High. So enough of that story. But it brings to the point when Susan and Jimmy came out and surprised me, we took a day and went up there and showed her the site where we once risked our lives. I'm sure she thought, oh, geez, I'm glad I didn't know those guys then. The year we were seniors, graduating in 66, there had been a big fire of a drive-in liquor store in downtown Cheyenne. And across the street from Jimmy lived a friend of ours named Jimmy Boggs, B-O-G-G-S. Jimmy once had a 58 Corvette that he would let Jimmy drive. He wouldn't let me drive it by myself, but he would have given it to Jimmy at any time. His dad apparently frequented this liquor establishment, and when it burned down, somehow about 20 cases of half pints of different flavors of mesh, brewed mesh, Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, Carstairs, ended up in the basement storeroom at Jimmy Boggs' house. His dad had bought it at a fire sale or something like for 10 cents a bottle in the case lots. I guess he was preparing, because in those days, remember, we all prepared for nuclear war. Well, Mr. Boggs was prepared for his municipal needs, I guess. But Jim Boggs was his name. He was known to sneak a few of those bottles out. And being enterprising like Jimmy was, come on weekends, he needed money for dates. Back in those days, you could take your best girl to the movie at the Lincoln Theater. 35 cents a ticket, so there's 75 cents. A box of popcorn was probably another quarter. And two soft drinks, you were under a dollar. Then afterwards, there was a drive-in that we used to frequent, kind of like in the good old days with Fonzie and the guys or American Graffiti movie. And then you could go up there, and for about dime, 15 cents, you could buy your girlfriend and you a cherry Coke. There went your buck and a half, and you were good for another week. And then hopefully you got another date, or somebody else would give you a chance to impress them. Well, this was pretty good revenue for Jimmy. I was out for sports at the time, couldn't work my job. Jimmy was kind of in between jobs. And other kids found out about it. So on Fridays, Jim would take two or three bottles of that to school, and certain people in the know would come up to Jimmy and give him a buck, buck of 52 bucks for one of those forbidden fruits. This is completely illegal, and believe me, it was the first time that either one of us were involved in something that would have got us in trouble, and had we hadn't rectified our ways, probably would have never been able to be policemen. One Friday afternoon, it's after school, and I see Jimmy in the hallway. He's taking off his jacket, and he smells like Jim Beam Brewery itself. I said, "What happened, Jimmy?" He says, "I was in my jacket. I had a bottle to give to one of our other friends, and this somebody came up and started messing with him, and they pulled his jacket. The bottle fell out of the pocket, and it broke, splashed on him, and it's all over the high school floor." Well, we had full-time janitors in those days. I see a janitor coming, and sometimes it's time to take a retreat. So I went the other way just to cover his backside. Jimmy ends up in trouble. I think he got out of it with a visit with Glenn Phillips, the dean of boys. And I can't remember what punishment it was, but it wasn't the ultimate, being expelled. And of course, it got back to Mr. Boggs that his kid and the neighbor kids were stealing his whiskey and selling it. It was god-awful stuff, and it smelled like smoke from having been in a fire. But we did learn from that, and we kind of curtailed those activities to more legal things, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. Well, I'll talk about it right now, because in my mind's eye, I'm sitting in the middle of the Shamrock. It was a little log cabin bar just on the other side of the Wyoming Colorado border. Colorado in those days had 3-2 beer. It was supposed to be a weak alcohol content. Many a Cheyenne kid from the 60s and the 70s before the stoners ruined it for everybody. It's where we'd go to play the jukebox, listen to what's her name, Tammy Why Not, and she would sing D-I-O-V-R-C-E. Well, see, there's my spell checker right back there. And Otis Redding, On the Dock, by the Bay, play the sitting on the dock by the bay. There's spell check again. That's my wife, Kay, of some 46 years. And if I'm nice, maybe I'll make 47. And excuse me, I am fighting a cold and a raspy voice and a sore throat, but these are things that I would have talked about with the family down there had I been able to make my trip this weekend. Talk about your outhouses. The Shamrock is still standing. It's falling down for lack of repair. A few years ago, our mutual friend Bill Peasley, Gay and I, went down there with permission to go in and take pictures of the place for our, I guess that was our 40th class reunion. And there was a two-holer outhouse there. Again, I've talked about outhouse poetry. And still standing there, and on the written walls, is a legacy of all the kids in the 60s who frequented that place and would sign their name or leave a message for others. Because, again, we didn't have texting in those days. You just had an ink pen and a bathroom door, 40 characters or less, or 140 characters or less. You could go all you wanted. It's still standing there. We should go down there and try to buy that place and put it in a museum somewhere up here in Cheyenne, because there's a lot more of us old-timers up here that remember the good old days of driving 17 miles to the Shamrock, pretending you're an adult, paying 30 cents for a bottle of 3-2 beer. On the way down there later, and I know Jimmy took part of that, there's a place we called the Natural Fort. It was a rest area. It was flat. It adjoined a natural sandstone peril fort, which there's evidence there, names in the stone, of an Indian battle with settlers there where the Indians had surrounded them. And also there's evidence of a big inter-tribe Indian battle took place there. Then that's just 15 miles south of Cheyenne on I-25. The last, well, they made it a historical site, but it's not a rest stop anymore. We used to have drag racing going on there, another illicit event. And later with the hot rods and whatnot, the midnight drags, all of us, Gay, Jimmy, anybody that had wheels would be down there at those drag races. One kid, I just had dinner at his restaurant the other day, aspiring electrician, even came up with the light system. If you know anything about drag racing, you have that light tree telling you to go. Well, we would set up on I-25 and burn them off, quarter-mile markers. We had people on both ends watching for traffic. And luckily, there were a lot of drag races there, but nobody that I'm aware of was ever hurt, killed, or mangled from those drag races. A lot of us old-timers still remember it. Basically, it was some fun. And yes, there was on occasion keg parties. That's an old tradition where somebody would have a brother or sister that was old enough to go buy a keg of beer. And then that person would charge a buck or two and would set up a keg down there in that rest area. And there would be beer for those who ventured. Jimmy and I just watched, though. I want you to know that, Susan. We just watched. Maybe we held one for looks, but we just were gawkers, looker-ons. And if you believe that, we got land for sale in New York bridges. But we never really did get too out of hand in those days. It was more of an Indian, not, forgive my misspell there. It was more of a symbol of growing up to be 17 to under 21 and be able to carry on like that as an adult. That's another fond memory. A lot of people in town can remember Jimmy at some of those. Now, I left after high school and working with Jimmy in the summers. I went to college for a few years up in North Dakota. In the meantime, Jimmy was here working, whatnot. I think he worked at the Garden Center, which I wrote about in another thing I just sent Susan. I had lost my first summer job after we graduated, which was stocking a brand new discount store, unloading the semis and getting stuff on the shelf. And the job ran out. Jimmy says, come on, we need another hand over here at the McIntyre Garden Center. He took me, introduced me to the boss. The next day, Jimmy and I are digging ditches for irrigation or for sprinkler systems. We're raking yards, getting yards prepared to roll out sod, trimming trees. It was really the first kind of man-type work that both of us had. Jimmy worked there for, I think, a year or so after I left to go to college, before he got on at the railroad. Before that, it's still standing. They just sold it. And they're supposed to be remodeling it and trying to bring it back to its 105-year-old elegance, the Plains Hotel in downtown Cheyenne. Jimmy and I were the... I worked there for one summer, then I got Jimmy on there. And the two of us learned a lot about life there and enjoyed a lot of the people at that Plains Hotel. Well, Gay asked, what did we do there? We waited tables, washed dishes, did room services, calls. It was a great place to work, your first kind of job like that. The myself, I have many experiences, but I was able to serve Lyndon Baines Johnson a breakfast there when he was having a meeting with one of our state senators. But there were all the other people Jimmy and I worked with were either our African-American friends, the cooks and dishwashers and a couple other bus boys, the Puerto Rican boys seem to have a lock on the bellhop situation, and mixed cultures like that. We grew up on the side of town that was mostly white, middle-class families. But we learned how to get along with all kinds of people down there. And I still run into this day. My nickname, because I was a big kid, was Magilla Gorilla. And they called me Magilla. Hey, Magilla, do this. Magilla, do that. And you know those nicknames hurt at first. But pretty soon that's kind of a badge of honor. Jimmy, I can't remember any other nicknames for Jim Lee Gurley other than Jimmy. Just incredible the people we met there and the experiences we had in life at the Plains Hotel. That summer, before that, when we were planting grass and sod for the game and fish, one of the places we did sod is where I work now at the Wyoming Game and Fish. It was all prairie. It was a brand new building. And we had to rake it and get it level and pick out rocks and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, that sod lasted, and there's just a few patches of it lasted because that field that we worked on for a month, they dug it up here a few years ago and made it a parking lot. But part of the edge landscaping is still there as a tribute to what two guys did back in 1966, the summer of. Little America, big luxury hotel here on the west side of Cheyenne. We had to go in there and really, really had to reclaim that land. The hotel was built, but they wanted grass and a pipe system. And I believe you me, there were weeds that Jimmy and I had to use axes on to chop down like a tree, and I'm not just exaggerating that. 4 foot potential tumbling tumbleweeds we'd have to cut so we could get in there and rotor till. Worked that job, and we saw that summer it was open enough. They had all the stars coming from Cheyenne Frontier Days. And we got to talk to a guy named Ken Curtis, who was on Gunsmoke for years and had been a member of the Sons of the Pioneers. I remember he'd walk around and he'd go back and forth from a lodge. And old Festus would stop and talk to us, two little guys there. So that's a fond memory. And another part of Jimmy's history was that. Now let me look at my notes here. I jotted down some, what do they call that now, kids? Talking points. Mine are written with a felt-tip pen, and I put a dot in front of them. Now, like I say, Jimmy got me two jobs that I needed at a time. I was able to get him one job. And at the end, I'm going to talk about the last one he got me. Just give me a second to catch my wind here, because there's no commercials. I'm doing this at the grace of my good friends with BBS.com. And believe me, you want to be part of the talk show world, this is the internet radio station to go to. They have subjects of everything you want to hear and talk about, and you can even call in and get your 2 cents worth in down there. The there was a phenomenon going on in Cheyenne here for several weeks back in fall of 1966. Our mutual friend Jim Honeycutt, I think, was the getaway driver. But another one of Jimmy's wild ideas, and I'm sure you folks in Ada we're used to him dressing up in character to have fun and fool people. But somehow, Jimmy Lee got the idea that we needed a ghost in our cemetery. There is two cemeteries darn near in the middle of Cheyenne with one of our main highways or streets go through. It's Pershing Boulevard. Yes, named after the famous World War I Pershing, General Pershing, and he was stationed at the Fort Russell, which is now Warren Air Force Base here in Cheyenne. You could drive down there on a warm fall night, and honest to God, you would see a ghost jumping from tombstone to tombstone right along the roadway, and you'd catch a picture of this ghost with your headlights. Well, the ghost was Jimmy in a costume that he had Mama make for him. Just like she made the East Beast costume, she made him the best ghost costume that anybody ever had. And this is for a 17-year-old boy and not a 11-year-old boy going trick-or-treating. So they would drive up to the cemetery. There was a way to get in it. The driver would back off and watch Jimmy and again, knock on wood. Nobody had a car crash in that, but there were sightings of a ghost in Olivet Cemetery in Cheyenne until the ghost jumped from one stone to another, banged up his knee, and that began a lifetime of knee problems for Jimmy at that time. But that was kind of fun we would invent, trying not to hurt anyone, but we didn't have to sit there. We didn't have telephones to look down at and get long stretched necks. You went out and did things. The best memory, and I know Jimmy shared this with a lot of you folks down there, him and I had the motorcycles, and in those days, there weren't that many motorcycles in Cheyenne. here we are, two teenagers. We have motorcycles. There was a motorcycle club in Cheyenne, but it was a community service club. It was called the Cheyenne Knights. That's with a K-N. They put on the motorcycle races every once a month on Sundays, about 6 months out of the year. And, of course, Jimmy and I would find our way to that area. And, Gene, that's where you learned to drive Papa's pickup, is right where that scramble track was. Well, Jimmy and I are hanging out with these folks, and somebody invited us to go to a Tuesday night meeting, and it was held in the back of Lee's Motorcycle Shop here in Cheyenne. And somebody proposed us for membership, and you had to kind of prove your worth for a few weeks, and then they would vote you in. And we got voted in, and I know Jimmy a few years ago, maybe Susan had to sew it on there, he brought it to Cheyenne. He got one of the original back patches. Now remember, this is back in the days before the Hells Angels and the Banditos and all of the bad press that they had with their club. The only thing you had to do on our club, on a rotating thing, that was a club rule, other than helping put it on the races, is when it was your turn to bring donuts to the meeting, you had to bring them. And then we'd sit around in the meetings, talk about the race business that we were doing for the next race we were going to, and getting everybody rides and bikes and for them to go to another race, like in Greeley, Fort Collins, over in Laramie. Oh, God, we did them in Pine Bluff and Sydney, Nebraska. They had a big beef bone on a chain. And if you had pulled a bad mistake, and there's an old slang term called, we'd just call it a boner. That's a dual word. But you would have to sit at the meeting the next week with that bone around your neck till you could pass it on to the next dummy who made a mistake or got a traffic ticket or whatever. Just part of the tradition that helped form the values that Jim shared and shared with me and made him a successful person that he is, that everybody there in Ada knows and loves. Looking at the notes again, this is not a professional prepared broadcast. I'm just talking on. I wish I had some of you folks that could call in right now. I didn't have a car, but I had a love of a car. I had a motorcycle. But my dad had a 55 and then a 56 Chevy. And I was kind of embarrassed to drive my 56 Chevy. It wasn't mine, but I could drive it to school because my dad worked nights. I just had to have it at home in time for him to go to work. 56 Chevy was yellow and brown, four-door, with a sun visor, fender skirts, and the remains of a Continental kit on the back end. Well, I'm driving this around. It was a nice car. God, we'd put new seat covers on it and everything. And Jimmy says, we got to class this thing up. Well, I knew that if I did anything to the motor, and it was just a six-cylinder, really a puny car with an automatic transmission, nothing fancy. Next day, Jimmy comes over to my house, and he has a full set of Corvette hubcaps from the mid-50s, the kind that had the little two-bar spinner that stuck out. And he popped off the old man's hubcaps, put them in the trunk. There were about 2 years driving that car around town. I had the only 56 Chevy four-door with a sun visor, fender skirts, and Corvette hubcaps, thanks to Jimmy Gurley. And if truth was be known, I'm sure my dad enjoyed the resin he got from his workmates about having Corvette hubcaps. Then there came the day when Jimmy had need of them, and he came and popped them off, and I'm sure he traded them for something or found a Corvette to put them on in there. And that's Jimmy. What Jimmy has, he shares with the world. We all know that. And most of all, Jimmy, I think, he shares his love and belief in Christ. And him and I, over the years, on our phone calls, I had several good conversations that way. Now, Jimmy and I being cops, and I was kind of a, I don't know what you want to call me. I was a big, broad-chested guy. I'd played linebacker at the college in North Dakota on football, and I'd given up on that to come home because I was missing Jimmy and other people here in Cheyenne. So one spring break, I just didn't go back. And Jimmy and I, well, we could. It's kind of during that time, I think Jimmy was in the service and stuff. And when I was at college, he was in the Army, and he knew how to beat the draft. He enlisted. And I got letters from him. He always wrote me letters, and somewhere I've got them, and I want to get one in particular to share with the family. Jimmy was, last station was in Fort Eustis, Washington, which is a Army post outside of Washington, D.C. Back there in 68 or 69, there was a big riot, made news around the world. And they pulled in all the National Guard, Army people they could to protect the public treasures in Washington, D.C. Jimmy was on guard duty, if I remember right. Again, Jimmy should be telling us this story, but he was in guard duty in one of those buildings, and the rioters broke in through the basement window of that. And he had to face hand-to-hand combat with all of those few people that got in. And I think in the letter he talks in detail about one of the protesters he had to restrain. I don't know of any big war stories from Jimmy other than that in the service, but I know he shared that with me in the form of one of his well-written, left-handed, beautiful handwriting letters. He would keep me posted when I was at college of what was going on in town with those letters, and I would get one about every 10 days the whole time I was up in North Dakota. Now, I want to turn a little serious here, and I'll pause for a minute, folks. It's some heartfelt thing, and if any of those grandkids are there that you don't think are age-appropriate, send them out to the icebox, get a popsicle or something for a while. But this is kind of a funny story. We'll give you a minute to regroup and shoo those kids out of here. Kind of goes along with the mirror on the shoe thing with Jimmy, but by this time he's a cop, and they're backing him up on a call, and we'll get into those details. I'm going to take a few minutes, have a cup of a sip of my hot soup. In the meantime, you folks remember bbs.com/Wayne Spencer. You want to share that with the people. We're going to start our rodeo reports here next coming Wednesday. It'll just be a recap of what's happened in the world of rodeo and bull riding the week before. And it'll all lead up to a 9-day live broadcast from Cheyenne Frontier Days and with one of the world's longest, best outdoors parade. And God willing, I'll be able to host it one more time, and my laryngitis will be all cleared up. Now, cop story. Usually you're sitting around in a bar or somebody's garage or basement or Jimmy's clubhouse out there that him and Susan have, and topics come up. Well, this is a topic about a dog bite case. And there had been a dog had bitten a young woman here in Cheyenne, up on her inside thigh above her knee. And Jimmy was there taking the report, and as we would do, another cop would drive by and just make sure he didn't need backup or that. And I drove by and called out at the scene, and Jimmy's in there taking the report, you know, the name, description, what time it happened. We had to make out a police report. And the lady, Jimmy says, well, where did the dog bite you? Now, she's wearing kind of a skirt, over-the-knee-length skirt. And she points to the spot outside the skirt. And Jimmy says, well, I have to see this for the report and draw a picture of it. Well, that was a part of policing I hadn't been trained yet. I hadn't gone to the police academy at that time. But the young woman was a little timid to pull her dress up and show that dog bite. So I kind of stepped out of sight but stayed in the house. And just in only the way that Jimmy could talk to somebody, I peek around the corner, and that skirt is hiked up just enough to show the dog bite right there, about 5 or 6 inches above her knee. So the silver dung devil left no crime scene clues unturned. Well, silver tongue. My spell checker over here, Gay, tells me silver tongue in there. Now, Jimmy was a very popular policeman when he was on the police department here. He was the first policeman to do airport security here in Cheyenne. They sent him down to Louisville, Kentucky, where the FFA trained him to be our certified airport security cop. And there, of course, he had exposure to everybody. In those days, the Cheyenne Airport had a lot of traffic. Two or three different little commuter airlines came in here, and all the big-name rent-a-car places were here, and that's where you had to pick up and rent cars. Jimmy worked that job really well and was well-respected, and I believe he was in the building the day it collapsed. If he wasn't, he responded. This building, it still stands today. They rebuilt it, but it had kind of a triangle-shaped tent-looking roof. And one day it caved in. There was just a few injuries, broken arms, bumps, bruises, and cuts like that. But memory serves, Jimmy was the cop there. I was the first one to policeman to receive the emergency call over the radio to be there. And just to paint this picture a little bit more, there was an old boy in there named Ray Fawcett, worked in the barbershop. At one time he had owned it, but the new owner let him come in there and work and sit, and he would cut a few heads of hair. Ray was a neat old man. At the age of 41, he re-enlisted in the military as a infantryman. I think he lied about his age a little bit. And went back in the service as being a young man in World War I. He went in as a recap in World War II. So he was a great old boy, could talk good stories and stuff. The building collapsed. We've got ambulances there, fire trucks, big booms, airport fire trucks, city fire trucks, volunteer fire trucks. I mean, this was, just like you unfortunately see on TV too much, a major catastrophe. And somebody were accounting for the people that we knew were inside the building. And finally somebody said, where is Ray Fawcett? Where's the barber? We couldn't find him in the crowd or standing around. Pretty soon, through all that rubble, comes this 80-year-old man climbing over the piles and climbing out. He didn't have a scar on him. The only thing he had was the dust and dirt from climbing out of there. And I just add that into you to give you a little color of what the collapsed roof at the Cheyenne Airport was like. And they rebuilt it. Now, Jim and I never had the nerve to do it, but there was a ramp that went up and over that roof. And there was many a time we'd pull up there on our motorcycles trying to dare one another to drive up those support ramps that touched the ground and kind of held that roof down like ropes on a pup tent, wide enough to ride a motorcycle on. Because years later, we found out a policeman had done that on his police bike. But we never did get that job done. But my gosh, it wasn't from eyeing it and trying to think about getting her done. Last thing I'm going to conclude with here. Oh, yeah, I've got two things here. This one is kind of personal, and I don't know if I'm going to go with it or not. I went over to the house one day to see Jimmy, and Mrs. Gurley, his mom, showed me in and sent me down to the basement. And this is a very, very sore subject. But, and I'm sure Jimmy had shared it with Susan. I get down there, he's asleep on his bed, and I couldn't wake him up. And I kept shaking him and shaking him. Finally, he woke up, and he could look at me, but he couldn't talk. And then later he could talk, but he couldn't hear anything. Well, in a fit of depression, he had swallowed a bunch of aspirin, and it put him in a deep sleep. Waking him up in that, I was sworn for secrecy, and this is the first time I've talked about it in some 55 years. But it was not a suicide attempt. It was just an attempt of a 16-year-old boy trying to medicate the heartbreak of being snubbed by a girl. But I seem to think right after that, that's when Jimmy changed from being a bashful guy to the outgoing person that we all know and love. I'm sorry I'm saying this at this time, but that's how much my commitment and my love to Jimmy was, is to share this one intimate detail. It's probably a secret. In today's news, we hear much too much of our young people doing much worse than that. Trying to end on a happy note here. One time, my wife and my son and I had gone on an airplane trip to California. And coming back, Continental Airlines had a deal called the Pub Bub, where you could go up there and sit, and it was a really nice alcohol lodge. Well, we're flying with a two-year-old, and you could fly free, but he's squawking and squalling and everything, and Kay wants to put him down for a nap, and there's three of us in a row. There was a lady we didn't know trying to read a book who was uncomfortable. I went up to the Bub Pub, and wouldn't you know, some big shot executive with Continental Airlines was there, and while he was in there, all the drinks were free. As we come into, and it was a direct flight that landed in Denver. We didn't have to get off it, and it came up to Cheyenne. Well, who's the airport cop at the bottom of the stairs when I get out? And it's Jimmy, and I am inebriated. Gay's carrying our two-year-old baby over her shoulder. He's, like, sleeping, and I'm carrying the diaper bag, and there's a teddy bear type thing in it. And I was one of the first ones to come out and see Jimmy down there at the bottom, and in my lack of better sense, I threw the teddy bear at him and hit him in the face with it. Well, thank God he only picked up the teddy bear and threw it right back at me instead of drawing his nickel-plated gun on me. But that's how quick-witted my friend Jimmy Lee was. So, Stephanie, here's a few stories I think I can share at this time. And just believe me, when I say I love Jimmy Gurley, I know he loved me. And the one time in life where I let him down, in the kindness of his heart, he forgave me for the time I turned my back on him. And all I can say, I regret not standing up for him when he needed a friend. But thank goodness I put this in something else. He met Susan. And you know the rest of the story from there, folks. God bless. Happy trails to you till we meet again. Thank you.